Hello and welcome to The Property Exchange, your guide to the latest news, views and opinions in residential property, with Winkworth, with you every step of the way in the property market. Your host is writer and commentator Anne Ashworth.
Hello and welcome to the Property Exchange podcast. In this episode, we'll be talking about prime central London with a focus on one luxe area attracting new interest. Following the autumn budget, the cost of admission into London's smartest inner city neighbourhoods has become higher for some buyers. The rate of stamp duty can, in some circumstances, be as high as 19%. Are these increases and the possibility that interest rates will stay higher for longer casting a shadow on these areas? Or is there now a perception that they offer good value after a decade of lackluster performance, providing an opportunity to seize the trophy home of one's dreams? Since the start of this century, the great estates, the landlords in these historic locations, have been upgrading streets and planting new green spaces, bringing in regeneration that attracts buyers. The latest place to receive a makeover is Knightsbridge, where the Cadogan estate is restoring some of the main thoroughfares. We take a visit to this part of town to find out what's happening and who's house hunting. With me to examine the prospects for London's world-famous luxe villages are Dominic Agais, Chief Executive of Winkworth, and Christian Lochner-Cruz, who's taken over the Winkworth Knightsbridge office. He's an expert on the smartest districts in prime London. Welcome to you both, and welcome to you, Christian, to Winkworth and to the Property Exchange podcast. But I'm going to be talking first to you, Dominic. Give us your sense of the mood now in prime central London, or PCL as the cognoscenti know it. Resigned to another year of not going anywhere much, or convinced that the only way is up?
I think it's a period of adjustment. It's had its travails over the last few years, since Brexit particularly, in a kind of perceived retrenchment from internationalism. And I think last year was a different challenge in terms of non-DOMs and what Labour were going to do about that. And obviously that's come in. And I think that's meant that there has been, you know, it is adjusting as a market, as ultimately those at the sort of highest end, some of them are choosing not to base themselves out of London. But I think what you do see as a market is one that does represent value internationally. And I think it has all the fundamentals still supporting it in terms of the infrastructure and the education and the architecture and these great estates that placemake the environment sort of to give it its appeal to families and successful professionals. So I think the pieces are there. I feel, you know, we will look, this adjustment will continue to unfold this year, and I don't see prices moving upwards. But I think you're starting to see with a new government perhaps the more positive side of the coin as well as the negative. And I think, you know, there is a return to a sort of internationalism being mooted now. You know, there's trips to China, there's talks about new relationships with Europe, and all of these things will support central London property prices ultimately. And of course you have the Americans. So, you know, we've seen they are sort of protected by tax treaties, and you've seen demand increase as dollar strengthened, and the value of property in central London hasn't gone up. And in fact, on our website, we saw 30% more visits from the US in 24 than 23. So I think we're in a sort of adjusting period as it sets to turn, and hopefully, you know, then it will start to look more jolly going forward.
So all those Americans have always dreamt of living in a London historic property in a gorgeous piece of white stucco real estate are realising that dream.
I think so. I think when you look at the markets, the ones that have done best in central London, you know, Notting Hill is one of those. And one wonders how far the film has gone to support Notting Hill property prices.
Would you say that's been an area more immune to the downturn?
I think it's yes. I think if we look at the different markets, and obviously they've all got different, so such a bespoke conversation in terms of the property types. But if you're looking broadly at these sort of sub-areas of prime central London, then Notting Hill has perhaps fared better than others. And that's perhaps because it's got a large, you know, historically always had a large American contingent behind it. And as you say, these are buyers that are unaffected by sort of non-dom tax changes and their potential changes last year.
And their perception of the stamp duty increases is that that's a reasonable price of admission to probably the best place in the world to live.
Yeah, and I think they've been going up everywhere globally. So I think the tax of transaction, you know, it has removed, you know, as has happened in the broader property market, the sort of speculative investor on a shorter time frame of 2-3 years, or perhaps the banker who was moving to London for and bought a flat for his placement for the 3-4 year period. You know, the cost of transaction have perhaps removed many of those. But, you know, for those to base that, you know, ultimately London is a place that appeals to very successful people to bring up their families because of its infrastructure and because of education. And for those, I think the tax is acceptable because they've got a longer term horizon. I think there's, as I sort of muted earlier, some of the non-dom changes relating to, you know, inheritance tax are more challenging for them.
So Dr. Johnson was kind of right. London has everything that life can afford, and people are beginning to recognise that at these kind of values.
I think so. If you have a global outlook on where you want to bring up your family and your footloose, taxes is a significant part of that, clearly. Education is a huge part of that. Happiness of family and a sort of real environment to bring up your, you know, if you bring your kids up on an island, in the Caribbean, where you may not pay much tax, they might not grow up the way you want them to grow up because they haven't been brought up in a real world. And, you know, other cities, New York is incredibly hectic and busy and doesn't have the green spaces and the sort of pleasant environment of London. Perhaps it's a bit further sort of pure capitalism, as is Hong Kong. So you start to look at it on a different perspective about the quality of life you want being another factor alongside taxation and career opportunities.
With those inspiring thoughts, I'm going to turn to you, Christian. Now, you're an expert on the smartest parts of London, and you've just taken over Winkworth Knightsbridge. I'm going to first ask for some coordinates. Where does Knightsbridge officially start? Where does it finish? And what are the main landmarks? We know about Harrods, but what else is there?
Okay, thank you, Anne. So the coordinates are fairly simple. So to the north, that's the most straightforward border, Hyde Park, which is also probably another landmark. I mean, it may not be a building, but actually it's probably something that's underplayed. I think, you know, you become used to Hyde Park as just being an accepted green space, but actually it's a wonderful facility. So that's the northern border. To the west, you've got Exhibition Road, so just before Royal Albert Hall, and to the south, it's sort of Cromwell Road, Brompton Road, and then that goes over into Knightsbridge. And then it's a little sort of weird, narrow corridor along the Knightsbridge Road to Hyde Park Corner with Belgravia to the south.
And the main landmarks, what are the most famous buildings?
So you've got the V&A would probably be the most famous building, but then you go to the residential buildings, you know, One Hyde Park, Harrods, you've already talked about. It's actually quite a small geography.
And we're also talking those great boutiques at the top of Sloane Street.
Yeah.
The flagship Burberry's, Harvey Nichols that's been there since the 1830s. So it's a great mixture of history and glamour. Now, you're talking about the regeneration that's happening in Knightsbridge down Sloane Street. Who's behind these initiatives? Tell us what's happening. Give us a picture of these great projects.
Okay, so Sloane Street redevelopment is just finishing as we speak. It's been a 2-year project and they've spent 40 million. Well, that was certainly the budget for it anyway. It's a partnership between Cadogan and Kensington and Chelsea. And effectively, it's just been driving a massive public realm improvement, which is better for the residents, better for the businesses. It's making it more pedestrianised, traffic calmed, beautiful York stone paving, improving to the planting and the greenery of the area. So it feels, I think it's actually the first time there have been any significant improvements along Sloane Street since it was originally commissioned by the first Earl of Cadogan in the 18th century. So it's been a dramatic regeneration.
There are already 315 acres of Hyde Park, but there are even more green spaces now.
The regeneration of Sloane Street is not about necessarily increased green spaces, but you do have more planting, more greenery. It just feels like a better environment. And yeah, it's only just opened up fully to traffic this side of Christmas. So suddenly you can start using the street again without there being builders everywhere. And, you know, the public realm is just a much more pleasant place to be.
From your years working in Marylebone and other districts, you've seen that this kind of project can change the whole perception of an area and bring in new buyers.
Absolutely. I mean, I started working in Marylebone in 2005 and then worked in that location for 18 years. So I went through a big journey alongside Howard de Walden and the Portman Estate, seeing the regeneration of Marylebone High Street, and again, traffic calming, much more planting, wider pavements, all of the same sort of thing. But that, in turn, brings in better retail offering, better restaurants, a better community. And Marylebone went from probably being a sort of slightly forgotten place, where I remember certainly many of the local residents discussing, you know, the charity shops or less desirable stores being filling the high street, and turning that instead into something that is incredibly trendy, very popular. I think the Marylebone High Street is undoubtedly one of the best high streets in London, overtaking probably the King's Road over the last 10 years.
And the same kind of thing is now happening in Knightsbridge. A new kind of buyer is coming in, thinking that this is a place on the up.
Exactly that. You know, London and its districts will be like any other part of the world. There will be cycles where they're more popular, more in demand. And arguably, Knightsbridge, over the last 10 years, since 2014, when it was at its pinnacle both in terms of pricing, but also in terms of its sort of placing on the map, has fallen back a little, not necessarily because there's been anything dramatically wrong with it, but other areas, for example, Marylebone and those estates, have been dramatically improving the offering and the public realm there. And those works hadn't been happening in Knightsbridge. And I think it's also important to move that into Chelsea as well. If you look at the redevelopment of Pavilion Road, Chelsea Green, and then Grosvenor with the changes to Elizabeth Street or Motcombe Street. But now Sloane Street has just experienced this redevelopment. And undoubtedly, I see this as a point in time where people will start thinking about Knightsbridge in the way that they used to. And it will be back in the light in terms of an accepted area of being the best sort of high street in London.
So who do you think is going to be contacting you and saying, Christian, we want to move to Knightsbridge? Who are these new buyers?
I wonder if it's new buyers. I think it's, you know, again, Knightsbridge is an internationally known brand and has been popular for centuries with not only the domestic market, but also international buyers, as we know. So I think it's just a question of, again, making it a more attractive place to live. You know, it's great to have a lovely home, a lovely apartment, but you want to be able to step outside of your door and have that same experience in the high street, have the coffee shops, have the restaurants. You know, that's one of the things that has always made Knightsbridge, Chelsea, Belgravia hugely popular locations, the convenience, the transport links, but that public realm and the offering. So it's just improved that. And I think where other districts, as Dominic touched on, you touched on, Notting Hill, Kensington, Marylebone, have had a good run over the last 2 to 10 years, it's time for Knightsbridge and Chelsea to see that return there. And so I think the buyers and the demographic could be anyone, totally international.
So if I'm an American shopping for a place in Knightsbridge, what addresses would I look for? They'd be looking for something more historic, I guess.
Perhaps. Again, it depends on the nature. You know, are you a family? Are you going to be using it as a full-time home? Is it going to be a pied-à-terre? But, you know, there are obviously very well-known addresses such as Edgerton Crescent, Pelham Crescent, Cadogan Square, Cadogan Place. You know, these are long-established, super-prime addresses. And then you have equally the new developments over the last 10 years, 1 Hyde Park, 199 the Knightsbridge, which have been associated with having exceptional services, brilliant facilities, lateral living, best in quality apartment blocks.
So a very nice family house on one of those squares. How much would that set you back?
It's sort of entry level is likely in the sort of circa £10 million price point. And, of course, these can then go on. I mean, there are some houses off market at the moment, asking as much as £250 million in Knightsbridge.
And what would you get for £250 million?
Well, you would get something significant. We're talking sort of 40, 50,000 square feet, freehold, obviously entirely newly modernised to the highest standard, private parking, high levels of security, so those sorts of things.
And a lateral apartment with some service thrown in.
Well, in some of those buildings that I reference, I mean, your entry level really is £5,000 a square foot. So typically you're getting larger apartments in those buildings, so starting at 1,000 square feet. So some of the smaller one bedrooms may be in the 3 million price point category, but generally from 5 million and above.
Now, if I just wanted to get myself a broom cupboard in Knightsbridge, somewhere in a slightly mouldering block that regeneration hasn't happened to yet, is there still something available?
There absolutely is. I think, maybe surprisingly to a lot of people, you could enter the market in Knightsbridge at around £500,000. So for some established mansion blocks, you could be just a little bit over £1,000 a square foot, £1,200, £1,300 a square foot. The blended average across Knightsbridge, according to Lunres's stats, is just over £1,900 a square foot. But that would incorporate the stuff that sells at £4,000, £5,000 a square foot, as well as the stuff that sells at sort of £1,200 a square foot.
And you've got plenty of restaurants, plenty of green spaces, the best shops, and you could walk to anything in London, couldn't you?
Well, that's it. That's what makes it so attractive. And again, touching on the reason that the international market like it, and we've talked about the Americans, but I think it's bigger than just Americans. You know, the dollar play should also be considered. So anyone, any nationality that's dollar denominated has the opportunity to, well, statistically, Knightsbridge is shown as being down 24-25% in price terms since 2014. You then factor in the change to currency, and actually it's about a 50% differential from 10 years ago. So there's a real opportunity for people to be there, and they want to be there for all those reasons that you mentioned. It is the convenience, it is the restaurant, it's the streetscape, it's the schools, the green spaces. Again, touching on that, I think we had, you mentioned Hyde Park, 350 acres, but Knightsbridge, Chelsea, Kensington and Chelsea as a district has 15% green spaces, which actually make it one of the highest density green spaces within London. I mean, not all of that is private garden squares. Some of that will be communal squares, parks, but 15% is a very high percentage.
Well, actually, that is in tune with the history of the area, because it used to be called, up until the beginning of the 18th, 19th century, Five Fields. And it was a marshy area where you didn't venture because there were highwaymen. And yet people looked at it and thought, we can turn this place into one of the smartest places in the world. Now, you've taken on us on a great journey round Knightsbridge. Before we finish, though, I have a question that I'd like to put to both of you. Knightsbridge or Chelsea, which would be your prime central London haunt?
So I think I've always been a Chelsea person. So I used to, as a kid, go up the King's Road and hang out when I was a teenager. And so I have a sort of natural affiliation with that. But also, I think, as Christian's been saying, it's changed a lot. And that Sloane Square, King's Road, seems to me to be back at its best. And I can't think of a better shopping road, and you know, I work around Piccadilly in London, so I would lean towards Chelsea.
One of these days we'll do a podcast on those clubs that used to be off the King's Road.
Yes.
I think we can all remember those. Okay, to you, Christian, Knightsbridge or Chelsea?
God, I'm going to be slightly on the fence here. I mean, if I was looking at it in terms of where would I like to live with my family, it would be Chelsea. I think just slightly lower built. There's probably a slightly broader selection of houses and with private gardens. If I were looking at it with the perspective of a pied-à-terre base in London and I lived elsewhere, then it would be Knightsbridge. I'd want to be right in the thick of it. I'd want an apartment and be able to just step out of my door and have all of the restaurants and all the retail right on my doorstep.
Well, that's just about it. Dominic and Christian, thanks very much for joining us for this episode of The Property Exchange. And really thank you for your insights and this great trip around Knightsbridge. Do subscribe and join us for next month's podcast.
This has been The Property Exchange podcast. For more information, go to winkworth.co.uk or find us on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. The producer was Tom Maddox. For more episodes, make sure to subscribe to your favourite podcast provider.